Welcome, everyone. I'm Jeffrey Goodman, Director of Marketing and Development for the YMCA of Northwest Louisiana. We're here at 318 Latino Studios for Shreveport-Bossier, my city, my community, my home, and can't wait to have today's discussion. Our guest is Glenn Kinsey. Glenn?
Thank you.
Of course. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it. So I'm going to just jump in. I could cover so much ground with you here as you and your family, presently and historically, are one of the most important families in the Shreveport-Bossier community.
That's kind.
I believe that. I firmly. I want to start here. You have said that your dad, Norman's, greatest business achievement was the founding of Transcontinental Gas Pipeline. Can you tell me some about that?
Well, actually, I would say a predecessor of that was the discovery of the Carthage Field in Panola County, East Texas. And so they found a massive gas field in 1943, and the war was on, and getting any kind of financing, much less pipe or equipment or manpower, was a big struggle. But anyway, that was the biggest thing. And then they found they had gas and they needed a pipeline to move that gas. And so that led to, actually, at the end of the war, the Big and Little Inch was a federal pipeline that moved oil from the Gulf Coast to New York for the convoys going to Europe, because the Germans were sinking all our subs in the Gulf and up the East Coast. So they built this pipeline. End of the war, they made it surplus, put it out for bid. Anybody could buy it. So my father and my grandfather, Norman Sr., got in a consortium to make a bid. They were not successful on the Big and Little Inch, but they got a permit, if you will, from the federal government to own and have a pipeline. So they took that and built the pipeline from South Texas to New York. And that started that partnership, that group, the engineering firm Ray Fish. They built four other pipeline systems, Texas El Paso, Pacific Northwest, which is in the Seattle area, Peebles Gas in Chicago, and Piedmont Gas, which was in the Carolinas, North South Carolina.
And are, just for someone who doesn't know anything, are all, some, none of these pipelines still in use today?
They all are in use. Oh, no, they're very much all in use.
Incredible.
Yes.
So I'm a shift for a sec to your mom, Peggy. So your mom, Peggy, was a force for this community.
Absolutely.
She believed passionately in education and garnered numerous awards and recognitions in her lifetime for her extraordinary community involvement. My question is, can you tell me about Peggy and some of her incredible work to make our community better?
Sure. Happy to do that. I would say her first work was raising kids. And so when my youngest brother Richard went off to college, that's when she really, really embarked on the public part of her life in Shreveport. She and my dad founded the Montessori School. She was on the board the foundation at LSUS. She was on the Community Foundation board, and in all those places made a huge impact.
And was president or director of the Community Foundation board.
Oh, yes.
Similar to someone else.
Someone else like me, yes. I'm a legacy there. I'm trying to think of... She just really was passionate about education. That was absolutely the case. And I think she brought a level of professionalism to some of these boards that she was on, because some of them managed money that led to supporting the institutions. But she did a great job at, professionalizing some of that.
And together, just to kind of level set for people, together with your siblings... If I get any of this wrong, let me know. But together with your siblings, you own and manage Kinsey Interest, a family office active. This is a super long question, too. A family office active in oil and gas, real estate, timber and public and private equity that's based here.
Yes.
Kinsey Interest employs almost 500 individuals in North Louisiana and over 5,000 individuals across the globe through your direct investments in more than 35 companies.
Very good.
I've heard people describe our community and the process of trying to address some of our community's challenges as eating an elephant one bite at a time.
That's right.
So my question for you is, as a family who is extraordinarily philanthropic and always giving, talk to me, if you could, some about your process. And what I mean by that is, how do you determine where to focus your efforts and contributions in a community that could use so much investment, attention, and support?
That's a big question. And I want to back up to the Kinsey Interest piece and the employees and all of that. Those are companies that we've invested in. It's not like we manage and have a payroll for all those people. And they're in this community as well as nationally and internationally, actually. So anyway, it's a pretty broad sweep there. You know, I would say because the family is diverse, and we use the Community Foundation and advised funds as a major way that we go about that. So we give to the foundation, and then as, the requests are endless, let's just put it that way. So you have to prioritize that. Some of them, my brothers and I, may have our own individual causes. My brother Chris is on the Trinity University board, so that becomes a major focus for him.
Which is where he went to college.
Yeah, that's where he went to college, that's right. And he's on their board today. By being on the Community Foundation, I see a lot of different organizations, and I see who has needs and who's efficient and effective at addressing their needs. And you want to try to move the needle, is what you're trying to do. My focus right now would be early childhood education. Education in general, but I think early childhood education is how our community here is going to be able to change, if you will, bend the curve, because these kids, if they enter school kindergarten behind, they're always behind, and they end up being dropouts, and then they end up with too much time on their hands and get into trouble. And I mean, it leads into, you know, the gang violence and prison and all of that, and being underemployed because they don't have good education. So I just think that's the way that we can lift our community. I'm going to keep going.
Getting
the horse here. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, as a family that is diverse, as you said, yeah. Do you guys get together once or twice a year? I want to be a fly on the wall. I want to be a part of this process for a second. What does that look like for someone who has never seen that in action?
Well, I would say we have, we do meet, really once a year is the big meeting, and we have included the next gen. I'm generation 3, gen 4 is, there's 8 of them, and they live from Chicago to Washington State to New Orleans. We did have some in Charleston. Anyway, we're spread out. So we give those.
Is there anyone gen 2 still with us?
There is not. That would be my father's generation.
Okay.
So, we get together once a year and we ask the next gens, we give them $50,000 that they can give. And then they find what they want to give to in their own communities where they live. And then they pitch each other. And then they've got to come and tell us what they want to do. And they have to pitch us. So they have two pitches in that. And then we make decisions, and that's where those gifts go. capital campaigns tend to stack up on us. There's three of them right now kind of leaning on me. And so...
And when you say capital campaign, just define, if you wouldn't mind, what that is for someone.
Oh, sure, sure. This is not an annual operating expenses from an organization. They are trying to build a building or move their endowment forward. Or these are large gifts is what they want to do. Generally, anyway, so that's, does that answer,
yeah, sure,
answer
that's
the question?
Perfect.
Yeah, they're large gifts.
Okay. What,
it's not everyday operational things, capital in nature. So we will put all those on the table as a group. And, you know, my brothers may also have those sorts of ideas. And we'll put them on the table and talk about them.
And how many days is this annual meeting where everyone is to get? How many days is how many days does that take place?
I'm going to say COVID blew it up, but it was a week.
Okay.
And primarily it was to have half fun and half business. So we'd spend half a day with a counselor or advisor or however you want to put it, referee, a teacher, all of those sorts of things that role that person would play. So we're educating the next gen. We're also talking about transitional issues of you know, going from my gen to the next gen. And
is this something that the third gen invented, or is this the way the first gen and the second gen went about allocating gifts?
Well, we certainly didn't invent the process, but we were the ones that instigated it.
Okay.
And I'll give my brother Richard credit for that, because we were coming to a transition with my father, and there's three boys, and I think he came from the generation, it's kind of a top down, goes to the crown prince, the oldest male. That would have been me, and my brothers are going, you know, I don't know if I like that idea. So we developed a way that all three of us work in consensus. But that process was done by bringing in a counselor. And so we've done that. We started off like three or four times a year for 15 years. I mean, and so he was about conflict resolution and how do you talk to your sibling in a civil way if you disagree? I mean, how do you manage that?
And is this counselor someone who's on staff year-round, or is this someone you bring in strictly for this process?
Correct.
And it's the same person every year?
Well, you know, each one of them brought their own strengths and sort of to what we needed at the time. I mean, families, people, it's an organic situation, always changing. So first guy worked with us for 6-8 years, and we had gone to Harvard's family and business program. And so after we came through that, there was a lot of organizational structure that they were talking about for a family. Family councils and things like that. And this guy said, look, that's not my thing. I'm interpersonal guy. I'm not the structural guy. So we made a transition. And so we had that guy for a number of years. And then we, let's see. So then there's another one came from the same organization. And he managed to upset my wife and a couple of the other gals, some of the next gen, and so he had to go.
Absolutely. Oh, speaking of, so are the spouses part of this week?
Yes, absolutely. Spouses, children, yes. Yes. And so that was a big discussion of who is family. So now we have in-laws. We tease and call them in-laws, outlaws. No, but if you're a family member, then you can sit at the table. Boyfriends, girlfriends, don't count.
Okay.
They can come and socialize, but they're not part of the discussion of what goes on. So anyway, and then the last one we had, because we have in the next gen of eight, six of them are female. And that's where this guy I was talking about got in trouble. He just didn't include the women the way he should have.
And if I'm not mistaken, you have only daughters.
I have five daughters. That's correct. So, and I heard about it in the household, in the pillow talk, and I, you know, it's like, this guy's got to go. He's not connecting with them. We're not doing what we intend to do. So we brought in a female. So that's that we change and evolve with what we need at the time sort of situation. And so at this point, we feel like we can take the training wheels off after like 25 years of doing this. But we still get together. We don't meet as a family group 3 times a year, but it would be once a year in the summer. We're going to do it in Chicago this year.
We move around.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We move around. At COVID, we did it in Shreveport, and then we did it virtually.
Sure. Is this a process you look forward to? Is this painstaking? Is it? I mean, it's got to be a fascinating process each year.
Yes. It's a lot of fun, but it can be painstaking and painful. If there's a tension that has to be dealt with, then that can be hard.
Sure.
That can be really hard. But it's better to get it on the table and talk about it and, you know, make everybody on the same page. And also, part of these processes from a business standpoint, we were talking about various successes that we've had. And the next gen said, well, that's all fine and good, but where'd you screw up? Where are your failures? And we went, there have been some of those. So... we would give a success story, and then we'd give a failure. And then the next gen was asking us, okay, why did it fail? Tell us, how did this not happen? So anyway, so that was an interesting thing that they brought to the table to ask us. If they're going to learn, that's where you learn from failures. Successes are fun, but failures you learn from.
Right. No, absolutely. And looking at kind of, I mean, is your hope and goal right now that this process kind of continues?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. So my youngest brother was the family council lead. And the concept is to have members from every branch on this. And so they function to manage and put together this family gathering. If there's something brewing in that generation or that those family groups, to bring it to the table. They don't have a business role, but they have a voice as to how things are done.
And in terms of, and I'll shift away from this in a second, but in terms of, I want to get these terms right. In terms of third generation, how many of the third generation are based in Shreveport-Bossier, and how much of the entire operation, let's say, revenue is focused on Shreveport-Bossier versus the rest of the country or the rest of the world? Just approximately.
I get it. So my brother Chris and I run the family office. I have a sister, Rebecca, who's the special needs and lives at Holy Angels. So that's 3 of the 4 of my gen 3.
Okay.
My brother Richard lives out west. He spends time in Phoenix and in Telluride.
Okay. And then how much of...
I would... I'm trying to think of percentages.
Yeah.
I'm having a hard time with that because there's a lot of pieces to the pie.
Sure.
But let's just say the majority is outside of Shreveport-Bossier.
Okay.
Vast majority of it.
Okay.
Maybe 75-80% is outside.
The vast majority of the investments or the vast majority of the contributions?
Oh, contributions. I thought you were talking about business. Business. Contributions-wise are almost all in Shreveport.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. I misunderstood your question. I thought you meant the business because you talked about all the people and all the rest of that. I thought that was your question. There is some out, and we let, like I say, the next gen make contributions into their neighborhoods wherever they are and whatever they're seeing and is happening. But most all of it happens here.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a dynamic shift for a second
sure.
in the conversation. So you know this from previous conversations that you and I have had, that I'm a huge fan of the documentary you helped put together several years back. So yeah. What I'd like you to do is to tell me a little about the Soundbreaking project, how that came about, and your involvement in it.
Sure. So Soundbreaking was a show that was put together for PBS. It was an 8-part series, 8 episodes, if you will. And it was driven by Sir George Martin. He was very interested in
and
telling.
And for people who don't know who that is.
Oh, he was the producer of the Beatles.
Okay.
So he wanted to tell the producer's side of the other side of the glass, not the performance side of the glass, but the studio side, and how that happened and how that got put together. And, of course, his story was incredible in that he has one really great line in there that he says that when he first started in the right after World War II is when he first worked and got into this business. And he said, my job was to exactly replicate the sound that was being played. That was his goal. And when he got to the Beatles, they started playing with sound, taking sound apart, speeding it up, moving it over, overdubbing, adding tracks, doing all sorts of things where the music was created by all the sound elements that went into it, not just the instruments or the vocals, but there's like the vocals. I forgot which song it was, but they had the three Beatles. Ringo didn't sing that much in the harmonizing. But so he laid down a track of the three of them harmonizing, and then they slightly changed their pitch, and he did that 3 different times. So there were 3 guys singing, but it sounded like a choir. And so he did things like that to manipulate sound. So he would say he was painting with sound. That was the term that he used for that.
And how did you first... How did this project first hit your radar, and how involved were you?
Got it. So some of the producers of the program that they were putting it together were partners of ours in a previous endeavor. So work with them. We knew them. They came, knocked on the door, and they had some capital drop out right in the middle of their project. So we helped fill the gap to make that happen. And so we started from there. And unfortunately, our first director was having a hard time with the long-form documentary. So a documentary's got to have a start and a finish and an arc to it, but each episode has to have an arc to it in itself and lead to the overall arc. And he had 600 hours of material, fantastic material, but he just couldn't pull it together. PBS kept telling us, this isn't good enough. And so we had to replace him. And he was the brother of the main executive producer. So that created a lawsuit and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, we finally got that got a new producer, got him out of the way. And then we went to see Sir George, and that was a real highlight. So we went to England, went to his home.
And Sir George isn't with us anymore,
correct? That is true. He's passed away. Yes, he has. He was super nice guy. He was very gracious to us. And we presented to him the new team and what we wanted to do. Because he was involved with, he didn't do the work, but when you did it, you would give it to him, let him review it, and he would give you notes back as to this, add this, take this away. So he was definitely involved with it. And so he, again, made some notes in that conversation that we had with him. It was very cool. And so I was supposed to go home the next day. I like fly home to Shreveport from London. And Giles, his son, also is an engineer and works at Abbey Road. And he goes, I'll be down at the studio tomorrow. You want to come get a tour? And I'm like, when my plane leaves. So I missed the tour of Abbey Road, which would have been so cool. So anyways, but that's how that all came together. And we received Grammy nominations, Emmy, the daytime, the television one. And then there was one other. So it was well received for sure. We didn't win any of those awards, but we were in the running.
It's an extraordinary documentary for anyone out there who has any interest at all in the history of rock music or pop music
or
music engineering and recording. Highly encourage everyone out there to seek this out. If anyone in this world made it, they would be proud of it. And just the number of musicians who are interviewed and who appear in it is just...
It's endless.
Mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling. And I would say a number of them have passed away as well.
Yeah. Wonderful piece.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm down to my last formal question for you. In 2011, your father, Norman, received the very prestigious honor of Louisiana Legend.
Yes.
During his acceptance speech, he ended with the following: "Although I have had the means and the freedom to locate practically anywhere on the planet, Shreveport and Louisiana is my choice." So my question for you is, what keeps you and your family here and so committed to this community?
Good question. And he did say that and feel that and express that to us. An example, there was I believe it was the Chamber of Commerce came to him with a capital campaign request. And he was telling us, we were talking about it, and he says, we don't really use the services of the Chamber. He said, but I wouldn't live in a community that didn't have a good, strong chamber. So we're going to support that organization because we need to have it in our community. But that's how he felt about supporting the community. And, you know, he had the chance to be in Dallas. His mother lived in Dallas. That was the small town at the time, you know. And that would have been... She came to Shreveport like 1918, because this was the bigger town where more things were happening. This is where she went to met my father and my grandfather and rest history there. So to your question, it's a great place to raise a family. It's a great community. I mean, I don't know how many people... when Bishop Duca came here from Dallas to the Diocese of Shreveport, he goes, "I can't believe I can get anywhere in this town in 15 minutes." He came from Dallas. He just loved it. So there's the traffic element. And it's not because there aren't people here or cars on the road. We actually have a very nice infrastructure in this town. If you go to Baton Rouge and try to drive around, you know what I'm talking about.
For sure.
Or even New Orleans, for that matter. So we do, I mean... It has all the things that you would need, restaurants, entertainment, all those sorts of things. I know I hear my next geners go, "Oh, it's not enough going on here." Well, if compared to Dallas or Chicago, no, it's not the same as that. But at the same time, it's just a great place to be. It really is. And so, again, if this is your community, you support your community. You want to make it as strong as possible.
Love that. Well, Glenn, those are all my set questions for you. I told you when we started, I mean, I was just going to scratch the surface. Is there anything I didn't get into or anything I didn't directly ask about that you'd like to share?
Well, one thing. So why did my father stay and want to be here? All three of my brothers and I went to Culver Military Academy. So we went off to prep school for high school. And then I went to SMU, lived in Dallas. And so those were mind-opening experiences in a lot of ways. And I was having a great time in Dallas. I was in radio at the time, actually, selling radio advertising. My father imposed upon me that I should come home. And I'm really glad that I did. But at the time, I was being dragged back home. But it was great. It took no time at all to reconnect with people. The community is very friendly. And I hear that from folks all the time, how open and friendly the people of our community is. And the other piece, element of that is social cohesion. So it's like you know so many people. It's small enough town that you know a lot of people, but you don't know everybody. Big enough for that. But it allows people to come together and coalesce over ideas and things to do.
And I think, I don't know if you're saying this exactly, but I lived in Los Angeles for 7 years. And when you're in a community of that size, it's so big that you don't even know where to begin to make any kind of impact.
Right.
Like this, you can actually spend some time, hunker down, and start fairly quickly figuring out, these are buttons I need to push, these are people I need to see, this is how change happens in this place.
And here's a way that you can get plugged in. There are lots of work. I would encourage everybody to get involved in a cause or an organization that means something to you, to give back. And it's the time, talent, and treasure. It's not just money. It's time and your expertise, whatever it is. If you're an accountant, that's fine. If you're a counselor, that's good. Whatever your skill set is. To give that back is a really important thing to do.
Completely agree. Is there anything else I didn't cover?
You know, my whole life? No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm teasing you.
Well, Glenn, thanks for being here. This community is so lucky to have you, so lucky to have your family, and really appreciate it. I know how many things you're involved in. I really appreciate you making the time to be with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Bye.